Welcome along to Wise Men Say. We're here to try and work out what kind of start we've had of the season. Maybe that should have been our question of the week, considering the hassle we've had on that particular feature this week. I'm Stephen Goldsmith. Gareth Barker's over there. Say hi.
Hello.
We're in association with A Love Supreme now, which means they send across some of their scribes to talk crap with us about Sunderland. Paul Dobson, a.k.a. Subs, joins us for the first time this season.
Good evening.
Haven't spoken with you over the summer, Paul. Hindsight removed. Were you happy with the summer business?
Generally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it took a little bit longer to complete than most people would have liked, myself included, but I think I disagree with people who said we've replaced it with less quality. I think we've brought in better players than the ones we've left. Obviously, the one thing that perhaps we should have done with, rather than, I'll not mention the B word, spend a lot of time on that, was to go all out and try and get a goal scorer.
Yeah.
Because he's not an out-and-out goal scorer.
So we try and get through the whole podcast without mentioning his name. Is everybody up for that challenge?
Oh, yeah.
There might be some answers in the question of the week that revolve around him.
Okay, right. That's a B word I'm going to use there. Right. Craig Clark is here too. We're kind of past the point of small talk with you, Craig. I'll just ask how you are.
Pretty good.
Okay. Enjoy the game?
Yeah.
Ish. Mm.
Enjoyed most of the things apart from the stuff that happened on the pitch, which is a standard Sunderland away day, really.
It's only
a
small component of your away
of
game
course,
experience.
Yeah. It was a good laugh, as ever.
Okay, well, I mean, this game beforehand, it was a fine line, wasn't it, between having polarising opinion on how we started the season. Had we won the game, I think everybody would have thought it's been okay. A loss and everybody would be panicking. Where does a draw leave us, Craig? I was talking to you. You weren't looking. I know.
I'm sorry.
He turned his microphone around because he turned his mic and faced it the wrong way.
Well, okay.
This is deviating from the point slightly.
Yeah,
back
on track.
I don't know. Stasis. It's still waiting to take off or potentially be a bad start. It's nothing, is it? You can't really judge it. You
look a bit at like Martin O'Neill a couple of years ago.
That's crossed my mind a couple of times, and that's a slightly worrying comparison, perhaps, considering that season was.
And we managed to scrape a win together against Wigan then, didn't we?
Also,
we don't have sort of games like that on the
can
horizon.
You remember when we had that good first half of the season under Bruce? When we had Welbeck. We were unbeaten in about 9 games, but we'd only won about one of them, I think, or something like that.
I think that was when we got hammered off Newcastle, wasn't it?
I think we started really well.
We were grinding 1-0s out occasionally.
No, I think we'd only won one game in the first 9 or something, but we hadn't lost.
I think we'd won more than one.
Well, perhaps one of you should have brought in the results from that season.
Something I was going to address. I was thinking more along the O'Neill lines as well. I mean, that 0-0 with Burnley... it wasn't as bad, I don't think, as the 1-1 with West Ham. But can you remember that one under O'Neill? I think Nolan scored in the last minute.
Yes.
And, I mean, we were backs to the wall for, 80 minutes or so in that game. I don't think that was as bad against Burnley. But at the same time, there was a sort of worrying lack of sort of ability to get through the defence. There was no penetration. The passing and movement was pretty slow. 20-minute spell aside, it wasn't. Wasn't particularly stirring stuff, was it?
Absolutely. Well, we are going to get into that. First, we'll hear from Gus what he thought about the game.
I think I'm okay. I'm not that disappointed because we didn't play the way that I was expected or what we planned. We didn't impose our game as much as I would like. At the end of the day, that's football. It's not always as you plan or as you think that game will go. So let's say I'm okay. It was a great opportunity. We lost, and with all respect to Burnley, it was more about us performing, making the difference, using the extra man in midfield, and creating more and moving better. And we didn't. It looks in the first half for 3 or 4 minutes in the middle, and another 3 or 4 minutes later on, and another 3 or 4 minutes somewhere there. That it was coming, but we couldn't maintain that. Yeah, it's something that we need to improve because, you know, it's going to be difficult to win games.
Craig mentioned being under pressure there, Sobs. We weathered the storm early on. It wasn't a great storm, to be honest, was it?
No, it was more like a little inclement weather.
More like a little hailstorm or something. But Burnley pressed high. We expected they would. That's how Sean Dyche sets them up. I thought earlier on our defenders, Virginia in particular, panicked. Gareth and I had slightly different views, so after you give your opinion, we'll come back to Gareth on this. He sort of praised Burnley. I thought we invited pressure on ourselves by a little hopeful punts up the field when there were relatively routine passes available, and I thought the keeper was at fault for that too, and I thought we invited us invited them onto us.
Yeah, I agree with a bit about the misplaced passes. And the, you know, there were occasions when, you know, it's our natural game now to retain the ball, or supposed to be. But it is a bit disappointing, and you're right, I think Virginia did that a couple of times where he was a bit hopeful rather than useful. But I think after...
The opposition just sense that, don't they?
They do.
You know, like, okay, there's a panic in a bit here. Let's step forward 5 yards.
Yeah, it helps accentuate what you said Dyche had already done with him pressing high up the field. If you know the man's going to give a loose ball away, he puts a little bit higher up, and that, again, that invites a little bit of pressure on yourself.
Absolutely. You're prepared to give Burnley credit for that, Gareth? You were at the time.
Well, yeah. Definitely. I think you can't just... Yeah, we were poor in our first 10-15 minutes, but at the same time, they capitalised on that and built the pressure, but they ran out of steam after 15 minutes, and I thought, you know, we controlled it then. I didn't think we were under, you know, any real threat. I think a few people have been saying that we gave the ball away a lot. Well, I didn't think that at all. I mean, we had the ball...
First 10 minutes.
Yeah, after that, though.
Yeah, okay.
Like, during the majority of the game, I think the end of the game, and we'll obviously come to that later, but I think the end of the game's kind of tainted, in my view. I kind of feel as though it's tainting people's opinion of actually what happened in the game, because they had the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes, well, last 20 minutes, really, and we, I think, Sunderland had the middle section of the game. They passed it well. Thought Larson, Rodwell and Catamall in particular, just, it was easy for them, but... It's that final third, that's the issue.
Wasn't easy because they were making or taking the simple option too often, though, and that's why we can't create chances, because they're moving the ball sideways a lot. And it's nothing wrong with retaining possession. There was a good moment, I think, in the first half where we kept the ball across the back for a decent period of time and sort of drew Burnley out, and then unfortunately Connor Wickham elected to shoot rather than pass to Jaggerini, who was in space on the left, which was sort of sums up Wickham's day. He did some good things, but his decision-making and selfishness...
He's holding the ball up brilliantly, isn't he? But he's making the wrong decision at the final time.
Yeah, I know we've been shouting with someone whose natural reaction is to get a shot in, but then the one time you think, oh, and there's another man who can see the whole of the goal, he chose to have a pink.
You've got to put Jaggerini in that situation.
And not just that, he's got to start to realise that he doesn't have to shoot. He can pass, get himself into a better position, and then somebody else can find him in a better position, and he's more likely to score. I would have thought that's relatively basic for a centre forward, but he seems to be struggling with that concept at the moment. Because it isn't just this week. That, I think, that followed on from Spurs, and you were kind of, because you were struggling to keep the ball in that game, you sort of wanted to get shots away when you had the meagre chances that we did, but not in a game like that against Burnley, when the passing was key, we needed to keep moving the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. Can anybody say emphatically what the formation setup was the first half? Gareth and I were sitting, and we had a good, you know, bird's eye view of it, and we were sitting sort of scratching our head. We couldn't really work it, was that, because Larson was on the right, and then he sort of tucked inside. Jaggerini just seemed to be roaming wherever he wanted.
It was the rhombus midfield. That's how I think the diamond. It's all about the rhombus.
I haven't sort of like researched into this post game, but all I can sort of think is that Catamall and Rodwell were sitting deep purpose on, you know, for the first 20 minutes or so. Once that sort of intensity from Burnley wore off, then we started to set up like we would come to expect, I think.
I don't know. I think they kept rotating. I think they kept being interchangeable and being trying to be fluid. Because Rodwell was sort of getting quite...
It was just freedom to do that, then.
Yeah, I think it was... I quite enjoyed watching it because it was organised, sort of fluidity, which was nice when, you know, they knew what they were doing. Sort of Jaggerini slotted in really nicely from the start. And did some really good stuff in the first half. Johnson, you know, floated about and got into some good areas. And, you know, Larson did well. And Rodwell was getting in that position, sort of, as he was probably the most advanced around the back end of the first half, and he had a few headers and stuff like that. And he's getting into some good goal scoring positions. So maybe he's just trying to find a way to accommodate these players.
But an interesting contrast to the last 20 minutes where there was a lot of people moving in between different positions, but with apparently no plan, where at least there seemed to be organised movement earlier on. It just seemed to disintegrate by contrast towards the end of the game.
You mentioned Rodwell there. His performance seems to have split opinion. I thought he was good, subs. I thought his presence made it hard for them to get through. You know, even to as far as cut them all at times. And I thought when he started driving, particularly in the first half, they were on the back foot and they were
worried. Exactly. I think, like you said, he helped absorb a bit of early pressure from Burnley. And after about a quarter of an hour or so, he started making those runs from in his own half at the edge of the box. They were good to watch. You know, they thought that there might have been something come out of one of them, but he was quite impressive for that period.
Rodwell, Craig?
I thought he was good, yeah. I don't have a complaint about him at all. I think it's strange that of anyone that you would sort of select him to if anyone's criticised him, it seems a strange one to criticise.
The issue of when you're watching a game on the telly, perhaps could that come in?
You can't always see the off-the-ball movement, can you? And,
because like we've just said, when Burnley weren't inviting the pressure on, I mean, they didn't even get as far as Cattermole in the first half because Rodwell was there to stop players straight away, wasn't he?
It's a fair point, actually, yeah.
And you might not necessarily see that.
No, I think they're jealous of his teeth, a lot of people.
There was a good moment when he sort of picked the ball up, like broke out of a tackle, and then he ran with it. And that's the first time I think I've seen him for Sunderland run with the ball, and he covered a lot of ground very quickly carrying the ball. And that's the first time I've seen him do that.
And of course, Gus Poyet, when he speaks about Alvarez, says that he carries the ball, that's what he brings to the table, and he's actually mentioned the QPR game, saying he wishes he could have played that game for that. Tottenham wasn't a game in hindsight for that because they moved the ball so quickly, so I guess it's just typical of our luck that he made that choice subs in the end, because after the game he just said he was cream cracker, every part of his body was aching off that Tottenham game. And you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? But you wish you could have saved
him. It'd be really good if you could reorganise the fixtures. You think, I want to play this guy now because he's just arrived, so we'll have a soft game for him, please.
I mean, I'm with Gareth that I thought either side of half time we were the better side, but especially
second half.
Second half, first 20 minutes. I mean, I remember turning to Gareth and, you know, saying how long's left. There was 20 minutes and I was worried that was going too fast. I thought that was running down too quickly because I thought, I bet we don't score here. Now, what happened then? Now, I know we're saying Wickham wasn't great, but the shape of the side looked okay. Gus then made those substitutions. We've praised him for his substitutions in recent weeks, haven't we? I thought it knocked us out of our stride a little bit. I put that question to Gus at the end of the game. In recent weeks, we've been talking about your substitutions and the positive impacts they've made. Today, you were just controlling the second half, and the substitutions almost seemed to knock the momentum, knock you out of your stride a little bit.
Didn't work. Like I say, sometimes you praise the manager a lot about making a substitution. Sometimes we need to take the blame. So I thought we needed power, we needed presence in the box, we needed someone who can go and make something happen, and it didn't work.
Okay, so Gus has put his hands up there. Craig, did you say that at the time? Is that how you saw it at the time as well? Sort of knock them in, because I mean, credit to Burnley. You know, at times when we were knocking the ball about in the second half, Dyche was on the side and he looked very nervy, and the players looked, you know, as if they were almost sort of accepting their fate that they were going to lose the game. Those substitutions just seemed to derail everything from our point of view, but Burnley dug deep and they looked like the likely winners towards the end.
Well, the first 20 minutes of that half, I thought Poyet's game management was excellent, because I think there was a more obvious shape. If there was still fluidity, but I think Larsson was certainly more central and he was more involved, and he was more involved in a positive manner. He was spraying the ball around a bit more. But we were saying, me and my friend were saying, we're going to win this game, but I was also saying, make changes when you're in the ascendancy, because you need that bit of impetus. Don't do it when you're on the back foot, do it when you're on the front foot. Well, unfortunately, the changes were just not the right ones. Why he chose to bring Altidore on and not take Wickham off, now that's not saying Wickham deserved to be subbed off, he just lost, it kind of lost the plot. He tried to play Wickham wide right against the left back, who was really slow and having a really poor game and needed someone like Will Buckley to have a run at him, or Johnson was starting to get the better of him, leave him on him. Takes Johnson off, so strange straight away. Then Wickham goes out to the right and you think, well, I've never really seen him play there, and he didn't look comfortable, so he moved him, swapped him round. Altidore finds himself on the right. Like, of course he couldn't have predicted Altidore would put in one of the worst 20 minutes of football I've witnessed for some time.
We've had Altidore's back, you know, a lot here, but yeah, I don't think there's no defending.
It was Angolari-esque. That's what it was.
It was like you've never seen a ball.
Bizarre.
That first,
like a competition winner almost.
Yeah. No, I mean, the poor lad, his first three touches didn't go, well, they did, they went further than I went for my holidays. You did think, oh, we're going to put two big men on just to give them a good battering for the last part of the game, but they split them up, they moved wide, as you've said, and it just... You sort of say, Josie, bless him these days. You just kind of he couldn't win a raffle if he bought all the
tickets.
He's turning into the
sort of like an ironic cult hero now, isn't he? And I've never been a fan of those, I have to be honest.
But I think it's going to go beyond that, where people's patience is going to wear thin beyond that, and they're just going to be...
Well, that comes with poor form normally, doesn't it? Because he had that last season, then people sort of, because we turned the form round a little bit, and he came on and won a penalty at Stamford Bridge and stuff, and people have started this season quite hopeful.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he gets the time and the patience then, doesn't he? And like Craig says, Sobs, if we start suddenly falling and find ourselves in the relegation zone, people are going to turn on them.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a bit light-hearted now, isn't it? Which is, you need a bit of levity at football sometimes, because it can be a horribly serious thing when it shouldn't be. But there is a time, like you said, when things are going against you, you haven't got room for that kind of performance.
I think, you know, you look at Altidore and he plays for America, and you know he can control a ball when he plays for America. I don't know what's different in the Premier League that means that he can't. I mean, the balls are the same.
I think the defenders are quicker to them.
I don't even know.
Just, you know, basically, like raw sort of centre forward play in England is holding your defender off, being strong, getting it quickly, and international football isn't quite the same.
The gap in difference is too big for that to be the factor. Like for me, Clive,
I've got to agree with you, Steve. I was watching it thinking, yeah, this is a player who, there's something about the pace of the game or the intensity of the game that is preventing him from like being able to like control the ball, because he's, I don't know if he's thinking a step ahead, whatever it is, he can't seem to get to grips with the game in this country. It's a shame, because he's obviously got some ability somewhere locked in him, but I just, the longer it goes on, he's had the summer, he's said, you know, I had tough times last season, I struggled to settle, blah blah blah, so we've all given him the benefit of the doubt and thought, come on, clean slate. You know, Poyet from the start, he's had him in the summer, and it looks just the same, if not worse.
It's almost like when some sort of Latin centre forwards come to the Premier League who come with good, you know, good pedigree, and they do well at national level, and the culture is that different. It's almost like that, isn't it? But I guess, you know, with Josie being American, it's hard to define the problem, really, it's hard to define America's culture football wise.
Their international game is now getting more like the proper old English hard working game, so you would think the transition from the international to us would be okay. And from what he did when he played for Hull and what he's done with us, I think he's come with 2 league goals in the Premier League and then a fantastic season in Holland in between. What, where's that come from? There's something there somewhere. I don't know, how did we go about getting that out?
I thought he actually started when he was coming on early doors in the season. I thought he looked alright coming on. When he came on against Man United, I thought he did okay. He's done okay in spells in other games, but it was just a bit bizarre.
That's like inexcusably bad for a Premier League footballer.
It was like a basic skill.
Yeah,
well,
like,
he might have the skill, but he didn't show it.
Well, that's it. I mean, if he couldn't get away with that in the Championship, never mind the top flight.
I think there's a mixture of things as well. I mean, it was a wrong change anyway.
Yeah, Gus got to take responsibility.
It was a wrong change, but even making a wrong change than Gus did, I bet you Gus is thinking,
help us out a little bit.
You know, like it's sort of like they've managed to try and get their heads together and then end up headbutting each other. That's sort of it's just, you know.
Yeah, well, we won't turn this into an Altidore bashing.
No.
The inability
we should have used
to
use the Altidore theme, Altidore watch, make it a bit more lighthearted.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Okay, a bit late now. Hindsight again, hindsight. Like the substitution.
Like you say, though,
like the question.
We do hope, you know, we really hope. Like, I think, like, I know it was everyone sort of that whole, if Josie scores on the pitch and all that thing, it is getting to that sort of almost comical stage. But I think deep down, you know, not only people want him to do well, because it means if he does well, then something to do well, but I think people really do want him to,
people are rooting
to do
for him,
something, you know, like to do something. And, you know, let's hope he can put that, he might get a go against Stoke, and let's hope he can put that behind him at 20 minutes and, you know, have a good moment in the next couple of games.
Okay, well, I just pause this final question to people on part one, because it kind of links into part two, where we're going to talk about the League Cup game and Stoke, and that is the fact that the inability to create chances is a defect that screams at you. Who can fix it, Craig? Give me a suggestion.
Gus Poyet. It's not the players. It's not the four. It's, you've got to get that
team passing the ball quicker. Are there no players in this system who could sort of take the situation by this?
Not if we play the ball too slowly, no. Because it doesn't matter who's on the pitch. If you knock the ball around too slowly and don't sort of
move. Is that the manager though, or the players?
Some of it you can tell. That game reminded me, and a little bit the same with QPR, of when Poyet first came here. After the initial spell, and he started implementing this game, and we did struggle. There was 0-0s away at West Ham and 1-0 at Aston
Villa and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, and it was this very slow-paced football. He just needs to get the tempo. Maybe that is partly the player's responsibility, but I think it's also the responsibility of the manager to get the players to up the tempo. It doesn't matter how good your players are if you let the opposition just sit on the edge of their box like that. You're never going to get in behind, and that's partly because we also do have a lack of pace, which is I think is going to be potentially an issue going forward, because Buckley, for his endeavour, doesn't necessarily look technically that great, and I can't see him starting many games, and without him, is there anyone with any real pace apart from the left back?
I think you know,
he was fantastic, by the way.
Missing he who shall not be named.
Be careful.
I know people have talked about the lack of goals, maybe that he, you know, he didn't score loads of goals, but he was vital that shape, and you know, he's gone.
Because acknowledged that himself, to be fair. He said, you know, without him, I might have to change things. I think he's given it a few games. It's just, you know, the longer you go without a win.
I thought there was a change at the weekend, though. I thought there was a change on Saturday. It's just getting that. I think he wants to play with some fluidity with that almost like a 4-2-3-1, or, you know, I don't want to talk about diamonds because that's the new thing. It's a new 3-5-2.
He isn't going to do that anytime soon.
Doesn't matter what the formation is if you move the ball
to pedestrian. Yeah, he dismissed the idea of playing two up front earlier last week, so I can't see the diamond anytime soon. Anyway, more of how we can rectify that creative problem in part two. First, we're going to revisit the flat. Now, for those of you who didn't tune in during the summer, which was a lot of you, thanks, looking at the figures, this is two people we know very well sharing a flat together on the quayside in Newcastle, stroke Gateshead. That fictional place they call Newcastle Gateshead sometimes. This is episode one.
In the topsy-turvy world of Premier League football management, extreme situations call for extreme measures. Two disenfranchised bosses brought together by fate, desperation and an undying mutual determination to prove just how Geordie they are. Steve Bruce and Alan Pardew are in the flat.
Well, you know, I'm absolutely delighted to finally settle down, find myself a place I can truly call home. On the quayside, absolutely.
Steve Bruce, after sharing a Sunderland flat with Darren Bent for 18 months, Bent departed, leaving Bruce alone, frightened and fearing for his life.
Well, after Benty left, it was tough, you know. I was up there all on my own. Anyone who knows the North East will tell you about the expectation levels. In the end, it's fair to say, I was hounded out of my place in Sunderland. It's tough being a Geordie on Wearside, that's for sure. Yes, I got my backside kicked, but you've got to keep going. I had to find a place closer to home, amongst my own people. Absolutely.
Unfortunately for Steve, his penchant for signing overpriced strikers meant his dream of that quayside apartment may remain just that. A dream. A Geordie dream.
I'd been saving up, you know, giving myself an opportunity to mix it with the big boys down there by the Tyne. But when Longy and Nikita became available, I had to act. Then there was Yannick Sagbo, you know. You're only as good as your strikers, that's for sure. I took Danny Graham on. I heard Fraser was also available, so I stuck a bid in for him. Then there was Ben Jarney and Asamoah. Then the boy Robbie Blake. It's undeniable how well these boys have done for me, that's for sure.
Steve hit rock bottom in his striker addiction. The straw that brought the camel's back came in a form nobody could possibly imagine.
Well, when a boy like Adi Akinbaye comes onto the market, you have to act. The lad is a seasoned pro, a top-level striker, there's no doubt. And if you've ever seen the lad with his top off, when he comes out those showers, towel-draped, water beading from his flaxen locks, it's a sight to behold, that's for sure.
With no money left for rent, Steve was floundering. To cover costs, he needed a flatmate. But he didn't have to look far. A shed out the back of St James's Park, to be precise. Well, Mog's budget wouldn't stretch to any decent permanent accommodation for me, so I was living in the shed for about 2 years out the back of the ground and was struggling with no sleep, and as a result I was tired when it came to match days. I had a back problem from the bed I was using, which meant the results were starting to suffer. Grime Carr was trying to sort me out a place, but you can only find reasonable digs out in France. Then it was in Tokes. Bet moving in with Johan, but he left, and then we was struggling to find somewhere. I heard through the grapevine that Steve was struggling to find a flatmate, so I suggested we club together and get ourselves a nice place.
Obviously, I was delighted when Alan stepped up to the plate. Absolutely. He's a man after my own heart. He knows the pressures involved and what it's like up here. It's like a goldfish bowl. There's no doubt about that. But we true Geordies are stronger together. Make no mistake. We can't wait to get moved in. That's for sure.
A match made in heaven. Or is it? After just a few days together, the cracks are starting to show.
Ah, there we go. That looks fantastic. Pride of place. Where it deserves to be. No doubt about that.
Oi, Steve. What's all this racket I've been hearing about? I was trying to have a nap because I was tired from the moving in. What's that? A certificate?
Absolutely, Alan. My pride and joy. My 10th place finish certificate of achievement. My greatest achievement, absolutely. Right above the fireplace, where it belongs.
Sorry, Steve, but I'd already earmarked that mental piece from our Manager of the Year award. There we are. Sorry, Steve, but the trophy is so big we were struggling to see your certificate. You're going to have to move it.
Well, Alan, I'm outraged at such disrespect and insolence towards one of football's greatest achievements. I'm disgusted, in fact. Once again, I've been hounded out, that's for sure. You'll not hear the last of this.
Spurred on by rage and depression, Steve lapses into bad habits and makes a decision that could affect the dynamic of the flat forever. Oi, Steve, where's the rent money? The jar's empty.
Sorry, Alan, but after we're little set too early, I was uncontrollable rage. I had a bit of a relapse and splurged all the cash. I've bought another striker.
Oh, Steve, we'll be struggling to pay the rent now. Who is it?
Come on now, Alan. It was a great deal.
Come on, Steve, who is it?
Well, Alan, when a player of this quality comes available, you have to be interested. No doubt about it.
Who is it, Steve? Come on.
It's Trevor Benjamin, Alan.
Alan is furious. He doesn't know whether to be more angry about the fact Trevor Benjamin is an early millennium niche football reference has-been, or the fact that Newcastle still couldn't afford a player of that calibre on their meagre budget. Either way, Brucey and Pards need to find a way to pay that rent.
Well, there's only one thing for it. We're going to have to bring somebody else in to help us along.
But who, Steve? But who? Brucey and Pards' flatmate search begins in earnest. But who will be the first candidate? Join us next week to find out on the flat.
Okay, we'll have Stoke City in the League Cup. I personally think this is a good time to get straight back into it, Gareth, because we want to try and build some momentum for the weekend. I know, you know, we won't get any points from the game if we win, but psychologically...
Really? Come on, get cup points.
Psychologically,
loyalty points, yeah.
You do, I think, don't you, this season?
I don't know.
You get loyalty points.
You won't need them this season.
Yeah,
you know.
And then if you get enough, you get an opportunity to qualify for phase three, if you're lucky. Anyway, start your question again.
Well, you should have been paying attention.
Enough of this banter.
Okay, I'm just saying, you know, I think it's important for momentum that we're not important, but it would be very helpful, I think, if we can win, put a good performance together.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant. But you know, the cups last season
were real.
In comparison
to normal cup games.
Cups last season were real. You know, well, it was amazing to go to Wembley and all that, but it did help our league form out a little bit at times, so... Yeah, if they need to win games to get that winner mentality, with a home game on the back of the home cup game, win that one, go into the next one. I think I read a quote from Gus saying if he doesn't win one of the next two games, he'll kill himself, and nobody wants that.
It's a bit strong, isn't it? A bit more strong.
Yeah.
People ordinarily, Sobs, like to throw the names of youngsters into the mix when it comes to team selection and cup games. You know, like give Watmore a go. Give Mavrias a go, that kind of thing. Where Sunderland are at the moment, I can't see that happening. I would hope it wouldn't happen. We've just touched on the fact there, you know, we aren't creating chances, and we need to use this game to see people step up, really.
Yeah, well, we've got Alvarez, who needs to get into the game, really, so that, you know, that's a...
The suggestion is he's going to play.
He's a fairly high-level kid to chuck in, really. And, you know, he could see that as it's a great opportunity to start, because you don't know what Stoke are going to do. They're going to make wholesale changes, chuck some kids into their own.
Probably. Most Premier League teams too, don't they?
I don't think it'll be too many big changes, but that, you know, the one we've mentioned for sure, and possibly one or two more, there's always Danny Graham.
Haven't still gone out to mid-level sort of teams, like, because they've played weekend sides in recent times. I don't know what Hughes' reputation is for cup games. I can't recall him ever getting very far in a cup competition as a manager in recent times. So,
who are you talking about?
Hughes.
Oh, okay.
So
I'm just trying to. I'm just
Stoke. Yeah. You know the team we're playing.
I'm just trying to.
I thought it was Pulis.
Yeah, he's trying to work out. He's still trying to work out how many points we're going to get tomorrow. I just wondered if Hughes is the kind of, you know, manager who sort of changes his team.
I think
for
most Premier League teams, regardless of the manager.
Do you not think there's been a bit of a swing with the League Cup where it almost came back around to being sort of a bit more trendy, where more teams start to pick stronger teams?
I normally
teams.
Don't pay attention after we go out to somebody like Mansfield in the first round.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'd imagine. How big is Stoke's squad? You know,
bigger than ours, I think. They seem to have quite a lot of players. They just seem to have a stockpile of players who are all similar level.
9 feet tall.
But they've got players, they've got pace. They've got pace and forward. Did they manage to get Asaidi back?
I don't think so.
Did they not?
No.
Okay, it was interesting. They got Moses, of course, didn't they? He's a threat. I think it's going to be a tougher game than might think. I'm a little bit wary because discussing he's going to make four or five changes. Now we've heard him say I'm only going to make a couple of changes before, and then he makes seven changes or eight changes.
Well, there'll be obvious ones, Craig, won't there? Because there needs to be some squad rotation. Bridcut needs to play, because if Cattermole gets injured or suspended, he's going to be the one who comes in, so he needs to play. The goalkeeper too. So there's two obvious ones. Alvarez is going to come in, which they aren't sort of wholesale changes that necessarily.
Well, striker's probably going to change. He's got four strikers to play one position. You mentioned sort of Danny Graham jokingly there. But he's still on the books and he's still picking up a wage. So he got on the bench on the weekend. So you've got Fletcher, Wickham, Altidor, Graham. He's not going to surely start Wickham every single game through the middle. He's got to play somebody else. I would guess it'll be Altidor. Now, after Saturday, he's going to have to put his ideas up. But, you know, he did do quite well against Birmingham in the previous round. He worked hard. He was involved in one of the goals. So if they were the four changes, that's not too bad. I'd quite like to see Billy Jones play, but not at left back this time. Rather he played right back. But obviously Van Aanholt.
If there was a case for him coming to the side for Virginie Saturday, you would think gone.
I don't think Virginie was particularly bad. He just isn't quick enough. He's not really a forward-thinking player.
And also, I mentioned last week, Sobs, Billy Jones, as strange as it seems to say, a fullback could be a little tweak that could set off something from an attacking sense. Yeah. He likes to get forward, and it could be, you know, him doing that could open things up for other players.
Yeah, I like the look of him in pre-season. You know, he puts himself about, he gallops up and down the side there. He's like a very sort of energetic player, and I think you're right there. He could provide a little bit of impetus down the right that Virginia doesn't quite give you. You know, quite a decent bit turn of pace on him as well. So if he can open up that right hand side, give other people space to move into, and that.
Okay, Gav's looking happy with himself. He's pulled up the fixtures from 2010, 2011. Do you wanna go through them then?
One win in the first nine games.
No, that's wrong.
No, it isn't.
Oh, we got how far we're going? Because we beat Villa and Man City.
Yeah, we beat Man City.
Then we beat Villa. How many games was that?
You'll have to be more. The listeners Sunderland can't see what you're saying here, mate.
Sunderland
so
2, Birmingham
clear.
2, West Brom 1, Sunderland 0, Sunderland 1, Man City 0, Wigan 1, Sunderland 1, Arsenal 1, Sunderland 1, Sunderland 1, West Ham 2, Liverpool 2, Sunderland 2, Sunderland 0, Man United 0, Blackburn 0, Sunderland 0. That's
so
9 games,
why
1
did,
win in
why
9.
Why did you choose 9?
I just remember it being 1 win
because
and 9.
Because we win the 10th, so it sounds better. 1 and 9 sounds better than 2.
No, well, because that was a point I made originally. Yeah. I said 1. Right. I remember us being 1 win and 9. So
I was thinking of the Villa win, which obviously...
That's 2 in 10.
Yeah, but it obviously made the start better because of all the draws with the two wins.
Yeah.
What
was the result in the next game?
Well, that's what I meant when we got tonked off the scrum, didn't we? So
it was 2 wins and 11,
but
and
it looked
5-1
good because we weren't conceding goals. We looked really solid. So you know, we're playing this derby game against the team. It would just come up and that, and you thought, we'll do all right here.
Yeah,
but there is.
That's probably the only derby game in the history of since I've been born.
Yeah,
I went in there feeling quite confident.
Same. And never again.
No,
well, I feel
won't
like
made that.
That
mistake again. No,
but anyway, my point was that the start is similar. That was it. And we actually had a good run after that, and then we were in the top eight, weren't we, before Christmas, before it all went.
We went to Chelsea and won 3-0. You wonder if you're going to replicate a result like that, though.
Well, last season we beat Chelsea, exactly. Manchester United.
Law of averages. They're due to put seven passes a game, aren't they?
Dear me. Well, let's just resign from the Premier League now.
Okay. Well, on the optimistic front, let's talk about Danny Graham.
Optimistic.
I mean, I can't believe, Craig, that we've gone round in a massive circle here and sort of Danny Graham even comes into the equation, but I saw you tweet something the other day. Is it that far-fetched, the idea
he would play? Not really. I mean,
he played in a system similar to Swansea, didn't he?
That's what I've always said. It was a, you know, similar system under Rodgers there, and he did well. He could have been a flash in the pan because he's not really done much since. But on the flip side, Altidore's done nothing ever in this league. So why Graham is naturally considered to be below him in the pecking order, I'm not entirely sure. Look,
Steve Bruce has an idea.
He has an idea.
Yeah, he's Geordie Root, isn't it? That's a problem.
We've hounded Graham out.
But that is an issue. Like, in Graham's case, it is an issue.
But it isn't an issue when the manager, who is not from the area, hasn't picked him.
I don't think the manager's
not
picking him.
I don't. But I'm saying that the general perception of him as a player is tainted by the fact he was signed at completely the wrong time. It was like a horrific signing at the time
for him as well, bless him, because he could have had a League Cup winner's medal if he stayed where he
stayed at Swansea. So that was just a move that hasn't worked out, but there is definitely the issue about the fact that he did tweet some negative things about Sunderland, and he is a Newcastle supporter. So
was that not a fake account?
It wasn't a fake account.
Was that not the stuff in I thought you must have been referring to that stuff in the Watford programme from way
I don't think
he has a Twitter account.
He deleted it when he signed for Sunderland. I don't think it was, no.
It's not that.
Anyway, Sobs, could it be the saviour, or do you not subscribe to that idea?
To be honest, not from what we've seen, you couldn't subscribe to the idea of him saving us. But if you look,
well,
back
I haven't seen
the
him in this system under Poyet, though.
Yeah, but you look. I was going to say, you look back what he did at Swansea. You see video of him, and he links up very well, and he scored not a hatful of goals, but he did score goals. So he can do it at this level.
Come on, Danny Bale, save you.
Yes, be nice.
If you're listening, like we always say.
Where's black boots as well? Looks like a proper footballer.
Yeah, good fashion player. That'll do for Sobs.
I mean,
I'm on board.
To be fair to Graham, I mean, a lot of people, you know, still sort of bang out the door, which is, you know, fair enough, and they'll use, you know, not excuses but reasons such as, you know, his lacking confidence, whatever. Graham's confidence mustn't be great. You know, he's been sort of struggling since he came to the club, and then he was shipped out on loan twice. He's had, what, four managers or something since he signed. This manager who signed him was sacked about 3 months, well, about six games after he signed him. So, you know, he's had a difficult time. You know, if he's never done anything adversely horrible when I've seen him play for Sunderland.
He's never played as bad for Sunderland as Josie Altidore has done. That's a fact. Like, none of his performances were as bad as some of the Altidore low points, like Saturday.
Yep.
Every time he's played, he's at least been able to control a football. You know what I mean? Like,
get the impression you'll be tempted to play him, Craig, would you?
I wouldn't be adverse to the idea of giving him a game midweek. Fletcher's still injured. I don't think Altidore's really doing enough to earn a start. Maybe he's bring him off the bench. Maybe he's at that point. Maybe he's worth a look at
for
20 minutes.
It's come at this point, to be honest.
This is the problem, though. We've got four strikers, so we couldn't really sign another central striker because there's four on the books, and none of them are really looking the part. Not the complete article that we want.
Craig's taunted around a little bit to the idea of giving him a go. I mean, people want to chuck kids in and all this, like, willy-nilly, just because kids.
I don't think we're in a position to do
basically
that.
Basically.
Yeah.
But anyway, people just, like, you know, you look at, like, you know, if you listen to Total Sport and, like, Newcastle fans ring up and just insist that they should play Adam Armstrong because, like, well,
because he's a local lad.
You might as well put Ryan Noble in. Like, he scored a hatful. He got a player there, like you've said, who scored 13 goals in the Premier League. He scored goals in the Championship. You know, he scored, what, six times as many goals as Josie Altidore scored in the Premier League. And, you know, I don't know. It's not as a ridiculous suggestion. If player in the squad and he's getting picked on the bench, then Poyet's obviously willing to to use him if he has to. Maybe you will see him. I'd be surprised if he wasn't on the bench tomorrow night, with Fletcher being out injured and the fact he said he's going to make changes. I mean, the only thing he can do up front is either drop Wigan for Altidore. That's it.
One of the other things that crossed my mind, I don't know how outrageous an idea it is or whether it's worth considering, but but you could. Jack Arini's played as a centre-forward.
Yeah,
in
he's injured. So.
No, not on Tuesday, but going forward. False if you're looking nine. For an alternative. No, he's not, because he's actually played as a striker before in his career and he scored quite a lot of goals, I think. Why not?
That would be a bit left field for me, that one.
Diminutive, I think.
But he would have to, you know, technically it would have to be part of something a little bit more fluent than just him standing there and people knocking the ball at him. To be honest, he won a fair few balls in the air, actually, on Saturday. Sometimes he was making more of an effort than Wickham was to win it in the air. Give him that.
As much as I'd like to talk more Danny Graham and stuff, we're going to have to leave it there and move on to the question of the week that kind of died on its arse this week.
Yeah.
Well, hand it over to him.
I didn't quote the question this
you
week.
Didn't,
so
there's nothing wrong with it. Don't blame the question.
Blame the person who came up with it, Steve.
I haven't even written it. We've got a group discussion about for Wise Men Say Affairs in on like our phones, right? And there was I put my phone down, and there was 40 messages on my phone of Stephen and Craig trying to work out how to word the question of the week.
It was a Sunday morning, to be fair.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah.
We got there in the end, but I can't even remember where it is now. What was it? You say what the question
the
is. I've got it. That was it. So
it was Craig
Josie,
who reworded it in the end, I think.
Bringing Josie out the door on at the weekend
seemed like
a good idea at the time, and it went really badly.
You can see the irony, straight away.
Yeah, name some things that have been attempted that seemed like a good idea at the time and ultimately have failed.
There's an obvious one right away. And
the winner, he can't win because he lives in Somerset or something. And
he's a guest on the show.
And he's
so
a guest on the show sometimes as well. Is Nick Holland, who said, judging by some of the answers so far, this question.
We said
like after about 12 hours, if somebody answered with that, they'd win.
Yeah.
So
we did have that discussion and said, you know, we were aware of the irony straight away ourselves. We didn't need anybody else to put it out to us, and we did say that if somebody came up with that, then there would be a worthy winner. But they didn't, apart from Nick, who can't win.
I think the upshot of it as well is that we were actually given two tickets by Sunderland AFC to give away for the Swansea game, and whoever wins this will win those. Mm. But I sort of felt a bit bad afterwards as well, because we're sort of the questions based around slagging off a Sunderland player, and the club are giving us tickets. So
it's not really slagging him off. It was slagging the decision to bring him on.
No, it's slagging for it off. I
was hoping for like great historical moments, not just like we should have left Wickham up front or something. Like that.
Yeah,
some people are just missing the point a little bit.
So basically, I think just sorry, just all around. But
let's get them read out anyway.
Let's have the rest of them.
I think in the end, you know, it looked a lot worse yesterday, like last night, didn't it? They've kind of improved.
Yeah, after we sort of clarified the question a couple of times.
After 40 text messages sorting out what the question was, wasn't it?
Like
enough.
A bad comedian explaining his jokes.
That's basically, this has been a long preamble to some people who just want to know if they've won some tickets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that bit of a banter there was better than the answers to the question. So.
Oh, wow.
Keep an ear out because... Studio Folk, because you can decide who the winner is. Tom Wilcock said signing Craig Gardner. at SAC.
I can go along with that. It's a little bit direct though, isn't it?
GSD FTM04 said waiting all bloody summer for Fabio Barini. Felt like a decade, made Peruzzi watch look like a 3-minute advert. Gus Poyet Red and White Army said making Mac the Clown manager, worst season of my life. Stephen Barker, no relation, said John Oster's decision to pass the time by getting his hair gone out. Richard James Purden said blonde tips in my hair when I was 14, I looked like Shirley from EastEnders. Nick Holden, oh we had him, yeah. Jay Rusty said dropping our saviour, PDC dropping our saviour, Lee Barry Cattermole, greatest mistake in football history, ? Neil.
Debatable.
Said Big Ron, recalling his educational background by remembering what happened in some schools with his mic turned on.
I like that one.
Sunderland fan. There's plenty of them, apparently. The appointment of Martin O'Neill, the man we all craved, who ultimately would have taken us down if he hadn't been sacked. Dave Marjoram, Bob Murray's phone call to Howard Wilkinson for his advice on our next managerial appointment.
Yes, that one's very real.
Yeah. And Ryan Frost said, when I thought drinking milk on a hot day was a good idea, milk was a bad choice. That Anchorman reference, so that gets in.
And it worked well anyway because he voted in caps lock, which didn't come across in
Garrett's
monotone.
I'm not
going to
do it. Yeah. I'm not going to do it because I'm miserable. so who was the winner there?
Any ideas, Sobs, Craig?
I'm a fan of Shirley, like. That's it. It's a good answer, that.
I like the Oster one.
I like the second one from the end about the phone call.
Phone call?
Dave's already got a season ticket, hasn't he?
I don't know.
Sorry if I'm making that decision for
well,
you,
Well, we haven't decided yet. I'm going for the Oster one.
Did that seem like a good idea at the time?
Well, we obviously
thought it did.
Thought it would be. It was like, let's go out, lads. Let's go and have some banter together. And
with
then off
gun.
They went with a gun, and then Mark Mealy's career was over.
Well, why am I laughing? That's not even funny.
It's funny now. Enough time has passed. That means it's funny.
Okay. All right then.
So see, as Mark, as he's sweeping up a corridor somewhere.
Yeah. You might be listening. You're listening, Mark. You know, get well soon.
Steve, since you sort of, what was your choice?
Oh, God.
How are you, Steve?
I did like the tips in the hair one.
Tips in the hair, there's two for tips in the hair now.
That's a winner then by
that
new
was kind of like the humorous angle I was looking for. Even though the Howard Wilkinson one is sort of
it's true.
Yeah, depressingly true.
Yeah, you could have another one.
I just Shirley from EastEnders. It's just on a lad's head. It was a lad, wasn't it?
Yes, it
Richard.
Was.
I couldn't remember who said it. Could I? It wasn't based on names.
I think there's what was that other one? The using the ducks flying in formation. That probably seemed like a good idea at a time as a team talk.
Never. They won the league with Leeds in 92.
The last season before the Premier League, he won the Division One Championship. Yes.
I haven't got any good ones.
The listeners need to sort of raise the game a little bit. It was a great feature this last season. Yeah. They've been quite lackluster this year, haven't they, the two?
That moment when you try and save time by like holding something a bit unwieldy in one hand and trying to open the kitchen door with your elbow or something so you can get out, and then you end up dropping whatever you've got it all over the floor, smashing it, and then having to clean it up.
Do you think Mike Ashley's thinking that 8-year contract maybe wasn't such a good idea?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know, maybe he's loving it. I just don't know.
He's kind of enjoying that in a perverse sort of way, isn't he? Definitely.
All of those signings.
Well, there's a lot of them for Newcastle. Keegan's return, that was another one. Shearer, manager, that's a good one.
Yeah, we're not having a...
Yeah, let's not
dig.
Go there.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, well,
I'm looking at the clock and I think it's...
So Richard James Purdom, you are the victor. Congratulations. Oi. We'll be in touch with you to tell you how you can pick up your two tickets to the Swansea game. Exciting.
Okay, if you want to go on the FSF website and look at the awards and nominate us for greatest podcast, that would be great.
Greatest podcast.
Yeah, greatest
no
podcast.
No one's going to do that.
Yeah, but just to get a nomination would be nice. We're never going to win it because like thousands
hate,
of people listen.
I hate
to sort of,
asking. It's like Battle of the Bands, isn't it? It's like how many mates you bring
thousands
along.
Thousands of people listen to sort of Football Weekly and Anfield Rap, and plus they're probably better than this anyway. But you know,
well,
it would be nice to be nominated, wouldn't it? Anyway, do that if you want.
I bet you the Anfield Rap haven't spent 10 minutes talking about Shirley from EastEnders.
That was only 30 seconds amongst 10 minutes.
In and around 10 minutes.
Yeah, in and around 10 minutes.
It was worth it.
Yeah, finish the show.
Yeah, okay. Wiseman said that we were in association with Love Supreme, of course. I'd like to thank my guests for coming on. Subs, Craig Clark from Main Gareth, as always. Over and out.